This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the RPM Subteam for Trademark Claims Data Review Call on Wednesday, the 23rd of January, 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you are only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Thank you. Hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it over to Julie Hedlund. Please begin.
Thank you very much, Andrea, and this is Julie Hedlund from staff. And let me just ask who is associated with the phone number starting in 1703, ending in 6759? Oh, I see that it's Rebecca Tushnet. Thank you very much. And again, welcome everyone to the call. And I will go ahead and just run through the agenda and cover agenda item one. And then I will go and turn things over to our co-chair, Roger Carney. So beginning with a review of the agenda, we'll start with item one, which is statements of interest. Then we will continue with the survey analysis, moving to claims charter question five and question two, and then back to any additional comments on questions one, three, and four. And then for any other business, staff will just announce the next scheduled meeting. And let me ask if anybody else has any other business. Not seeing any hands. So let me move back to agenda item one and ask if anybody has any updates to their statements of interest. I'm not seeing any hands there either. Let me then go ahead and turn things over to Roger Carney, our co-chair. And I'm just going to note for everybody's reference that we will pull up the documents in Adobe Connect as we are ready to go through them, and that the text that's been added is in green. In addition, text that staff added based on last week's call is also in green, but we'll just cover the new text from those who did the homework and provided input in these documents today. Then, please let me go to Roger and turn things over to you.
Thanks, Julie. Welcome, everyone. Let's go ahead and jump into question five. It seemed like we did a good job of lining these two questions up, so it'll be nice to finish these up since they tag team each other quite a bit here. Let's jump to question five, I'll just go ahead and read. Should the trademark claims period continue to be uniform for all types of GLTs in subsequent rounds? And I'll open it up for comments. It seemed like most of the comments were fairly consistent, but anybody want to bring up any discrepancies they saw, or anybody want to speak specific to their comments, please go ahead. I see Kathy has asked for people to summarize their comments. I'll just go through the list. And George, if you want to summarize your comments.
Hi, George Brickos for the transcript. I thought we did this last week, and so our thing you comments from Christine, Kathy, and I'm not sure if Maxim did his last week already as well.
Okay, thanks, George. Maxim, would you like to speak to what you added?
Sorry, I'm having trouble hearing, Roger. This is Kathy. Did you just ask me to speak?
Go ahead, Kathy, if you'd like. Yes, please.
Okay, so I noticed that there was a table in the registry tab, Q29, that asked us this question, but asked it a slightly different way. Should trademark claims, and you know what? I'm going to dig it out. So, but basically, you know, every combination of, should the sunrise continue to be mandatory or optional? Should trademark claims continue to be mandatory or optional? And what I summarized here was what I found is that the majority of registries think that the claims period should be optional, if I read the table correctly. Some think that the sunrise period should be required and the trademark claims period optional. Others think that both should be optional. The highest numbers think that one should be required and one shouldn't, but that the registry should be allowed to choose. But few thought that both should continue to be required. So I thought that was a really interesting table. Back to you, Roger. Thank you.
Roger, if you're speaking, we're not hearing you.
Thank you, Julie. Thanks, Kathy. Let's move on and see, is Griffin on the call?
Roger, this is Julie Hedlund from staff. Unfortunately, Griffin is an apology. He had a late breaking conflict.
Oh, okay. Let's move on. Does Kristen make it back? Maybe she'd like to speak to her additions. Go ahead, Kristen.
Hi, thanks, Christine Duran, for the transcript. Yeah, I basically just was agreeing with everyone else, so I don't think there's much more explanation above. I think that, generally speaking, most of the registry operators have kind of already sunk costs in this. So to the extent that people talk about, you know, how or less cost there is from the registry operator standpoint, there's really no additional cost to registry operators other than, you know, the possible deterrent effect of, you know, maybe someone wouldn't register domain name. And so I wanted to make it, my main point is that in this case where we have sort of merged, and I think having the separate questions 29 broken out is helpful, but where the survey lumps registry and registrar comments together, I think it's just super important to distinguish between what the registries think on this and what the registrars think on this, because they're impacted differently with respect to sunrise and claims. So I just wanted to make sure that we didn't kind of accidentally lump them together. It wasn't really sort of a comment on anything specific other than that.
Okay. Thank you. George, I see your hands up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, George Corrigos for the transcript. Yeah, I did have a comment on that comment by Christine about the sunk cost. In our review, we're kind of looking both backwards and forwards. So to the extent that, you know, the existing registry operators have already done the sunrise and the TMCH, those are indeed sunk costs. However, we have to kind of look prospectively into the future, and new entrants into the registry market wouldn't have those sunk costs. And so that's why we should be, you know, careful to not assume that future registry operators will be the same as the current set of registry operators. When we talk about solutions, you know, it's a little premature, but one idea I had was that, you know, perhaps ICANN might, you know, do some open source software to make the job easier for registry operators and registrars so that, you know, there's no advantage to the existing registries and registry operator and registrars, sorry. But we can talk about that in more detail once we start talking about recommendations. Thank you.
Thanks, George. That's a very good point on the future new registries or registrars that are coming on. All right, Kathy, your hands up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I unfortunately I couldn't hear George, so it's hard when you don't have good communication. So I hope I'm not repeating what he said. I wanted to note that this table is specifically registries. It's hard. I know a few of us have mentioned it's hard when we've merged the registry and registrar survey, and I find it hard to read because there are different questions and they're intended for different things, and yet we kind of have them all on the same table. But this response, which seems to indicate absolutely that the registries do not want the trademark claims period to continue to be uniform, in that they seem to want to choose what it is that they're doing. They seem to want to go back to the old or, which is Sunrise or trademark claims. But that was a registry survey, at least it says registry 29A, so it was part of the registry analysis data, the analysis group registry data. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. From, I guess, a registrar perspective, the registries may not or may want some chance to be a little different in this. But I think it becomes, from a registrar standpoint, very difficult to explain those differences to registrants as they're registering. You know, a lot of times they register multiple names across DLDs, and then somehow you have to explain the rules are slightly different for this one and that one, and it gets really complicated. Just registrar viewpoint, I guess. Okay, we can move on. Any other questions or comments on question five? Okay, nothing on five. We can move on to question two. All right. And George, your comments had been in here for a while. Is that correct? We can move on to Christine and see what she has to say.
Yes, that's correct. Mine were from last week.
Yep. Thanks, George. All right, so let's go ahead and move on. Anybody else? Christine, you want to speak to anything?
Thanks. This was Christine. Mine were from last week, I believe.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. And again, I think a lot of these did support each other, so I don't think there was anything too much controversial here. What else do we have? Griffin's not here. Christine, I had the same question you did on the registry operator one back to Griffin, so we can catch up with him and see what his response is on that. I think that's all of the items that we need to cover. Does anybody have anything they want to add for question two? Everybody's making it easy today. Kathy, please go ahead.
Yeah, for those of us who have had our heads in other things like Sunrise, what does the data say? What are we thinking on this? Apologies, I'm trying to figure out kind of where we are.
Thanks, Kathy. George, do you want to give a summary of what you saw?
George Krikos again for the transcript. It was mostly from, I guess, the registries and registrars tab. This was whether the claims period should be extended. What I saw was that the data from the survey was that the registries and registrars wanted the claims to be shortened or eliminated and not extended due to the negative impacts they experienced. And that was from the cells in the comment. And they felt that eliminating or shortening the claims would have no impact on cyber squatting. For subpoint D about the exemptions from claims RPM, I didn't find anything in the survey itself. And even for point E about the proof of use requirements, it was kind of hinted at being desirable in some of the answers where, you know, there were too many dictionary words that were legitimately could have been legitimately registered by a customer, but were not, there are too many generic terms. And so that was something that registries and expressed concerns about. Thanks.
Thanks, George. All right. Any other questions or comments on question two? Okay. Well, then I think we will open it up and head back to question one and see if there's any comments or questions people want to bring up. I know Rebecca had what looks like a new comment. I don't know if she wants to add anything. George, hands up. Please go ahead, George.
Yeah, George Griffiths here. Yeah, I saw Rebecca's new comment, and I tend to agree with it, that there is a bifurcation in the survey between the ICANN selected sample or the ICANN promoted sample and the panel sample that was produced by the survey maker. So she was pointing that out in her comments.
Thanks, George.
Sorry, this is Rebecca Tushnet. I'm temporarily incapacitated. I'm listening, but I'm sorry, I can't say very much.
Okay, no problem. Thanks, Rebecca. Okay. Any other further comments for question one? Okay. We can move back to question three then. All right, it looks like there are a few comments here, new comments. Christine, do you want to speak to any of the comments that you put in?
This is Christine. I'm actually reading to figure out what question three is about.
Okay.
Let me see here. Yeah, I think my main comment really was that we've sort of already, I mean, to the closest this group has come to a recommendation so far is I think we've generally agreed that the claims notice could be improved. I mean, I don't think anybody on this group has said, gosh, it's just lovely and delightful as written. So I think for question A1, yeah, I mean, it's my point, I guess, I was trying to make here is that I think the claims notice is meeting its intended purpose. That's the answer to A, in that it is showing that it's deterring some people who are possibly, innocent infringers or even bad actors or whatever. And additionally, not instead, but it may be discouraging other people who would otherwise have a right to register. So that's fine. But the intended purpose was to reduce cyber squatting, and I think possibly it's done that, or at least providing notice. But is it hard to understand? Sure. Could it be improved? Sure. So I think the way the question was worded implied that you had to answer no to get to does it need to be improved. And my point here is that I think you can answer yes to question A or to 3A. And still say it's hard to understand and could still be improved. I think it does inform applicants of the scope and limitations of trademark holders' rights. I mean, I think that was clear that it provides that information. But again, I think it could also still be improved because maybe it provides too much information or not enough information. And so I think the question's worded a little awkwardly. And that was, I think, the point I was trying to make here.
Perfect. Yeah, I think that is a general agreement from the group. So thanks, Christine. Kathy, your hand's up. Please go ahead.
Yes. So as you can see, I got cut off. The last comment is cut off because I got cut off in the middle of typing at 12:01. So note to staff, it's not an advanced placement exam. Maybe we can give people 5 minutes to finish their thoughts. What I was doing was actually cutting and pasting from Griffin's comment above, where I thought we had agreed, to summarize what Christine said, I thought we had agreed it seems to be meeting its intended purpose, but we had pretty clear answers to A, 2, and 3, and Griffin had actually summarized it. So what I was doing was cutting and pasting what he said, and I'll just read it. It's just one long sentence, I think. Ultimately, the wording of the claims notice could likely be improved to improve its effectiveness, comma. The notice delivered in additional translations in multiple languages, comma, and mechanisms put into place to ensure potential registrants confronted with a claims notice actually read the entire notice before choosing whether to proceed with registration or not. There is some question about when to do the registration, but in general, that seemed to be a pretty good summary, and I thought that's what we had agreed. So to the extent that staff, and they're doing it more in Sunrise, I think, than in trademark claims, and you know, to the co-chairs, do we need this? But, you know, if there's a summary of sub-team agreement that can appear at the bottom of the document, and again, I'm seeing it in some other places, that's kind of the summary, is that, yes, it's meeting its intended purpose, but to the other sub-question, it is hard to understand. It is somewhat intimidating. It is not being translated. So I think we've got pretty clear answers on 3A, 1, and 2. That should go into the summary that I got cut off as I was trying to write, which I think is great. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Christine, your hand's up. Please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Christine, and I'm actually intending to move us on to 3B if no one else wanted to say anything on 3A, because I also had a comment on 3B that I was ready to discuss.
Okay. Okay. I'll just put it out there real quick. Does anybody have any issues, or does anybody disagree that the group has come to agreement, I guess, on that 3A? George, do you want to speak to that real quick?
I just want to clarify that we're not necessarily reaching agreement on 3A, the answer. It's more 3A, what the survey says about 3A. Because
that is correct. Off.
Okay, thanks.
Phil, your hand's up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I'm certainly in agreement, and I'm glad there's agreement in the sub-team, and I think we'll find the same thing in the working group, that the current language of the claims notice is not optimal and can be improved. I just want to make 2 points about that. One is that if the working group makes a recommendation in the initial report that the language be improved, my understanding, and I think I'm correct on this, but want to put it out there for comment, is that as a policy working group, we don't have to agree on final text or revised language. That's an implementation detail. We just have to agree that the language should be improved and give guidance to the implementation team in what ways it should be improved. The second point I wanted to make, and I've made this before, is that we how it would be improved, the language of a claims notice will obviously depend on how we deal with other questions. For example, if a trademark holder was permitted to register things other than a registered mark, but some variation of the mark in the clearinghouse, or if a claims notice was triggered, even if only registered marks are in the clearinghouse, if a claims notice can be triggered by some forms of variations of the marks, then, of course, the language of the claims notice would have to be more detailed, and I'm afraid it would probably be more confusing because it would have to address both exact matches and non-exact matches or exact matches of non-trademarks. But so I hope that's not confusing, but I just wanted to lay out that in the process we're following, the policy recommendations don't have to provide the recommended language, but they do have to agree, give some guidance. It would be useful to give guidance to implementers if that recommendation makes it through and is adopted. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Bella. All right, let's go ahead and move on to Christine and 3B.
Thanks a lot. This is Christine. So my comment on 3B was because I was actually one of the co-chairs with Michael Graham that wrote, kind of helped wrangle these questions into some sort of order, I feel like I can make the admission on our behalf that maybe the question's unfortunately worded. So it's sort of wise that you have an, you know, should the claims notice only be sent to registrants who complete as opposed to attempt to register? So I think the question's a little confusing. So I think what we need to do when we look at 3B is figure out sort of what it is, what's the intent here. We had, the reason we came up with 3 even as a question is because of the point that the registrars made in their survey responses, which was that when people were trying to pre-register domain names, which, to be extremely clear, pre-registration is not a thing. It's not an ICANN thing. It's not a status. It's not a thing you can do. It's a sales technique that registrars, some registrars use. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just one way registrars sell domain names and offer services to their customers. So the question here is if we are obligated or want to address this problem that registrars discovered in that they're trying to engage in the sales practice and the practicalities of having to present a claims notice and possibly the way that claims token times out at the TMCH end, it looks like it's presenting a problem. If it's something that we think we should be addressing, or if we should just let the market sort itself out, I wanted to just flag here, I think we don't want to be too limiting in our interpretation of this question, because I think that we should discuss as a group and maybe kick it to implementation, but we should discuss as a group, like, is this a problem that we want to address and consider that situation under 3B? And that was the point I was trying to make there. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. That helps on understanding what 3B is saying. So thank you. Kathy.
Quickly to Phil's comment, I would note that the claims notice actually came from the SPI. The claims notice was approved by, it's a little unusual to go into that kind of detail, but it was actually approved by the council and by the board. So, if we're going to give it to an implementation team, I think we do have to give them a lot of guidance and urge focus groups and things like that, because we didn't have enough time to do it in the FCI. We were running too fast to go out to, you know, groups of people and ask them if they understand. Okay, but to 3B, I'm glad we're pushing on this farther, because there is new data, and I wish I could give you the field, but when you print out these things, they don't. So I'll put it in. But there was a question 13 to registrars that says, do you or did you ever offer pre-order for new generic top-level domain names before the launch of the general availability period? And I was shocked to find out that 15 of the 17 respondents do. They do engage in this pre-sale of domain names. So this is a big problem for them. That the person who registers first among their people and also maybe among the, you know, people in the world can't necessarily get that domain name because, if I understand what Roger had told us last week, the token times out. So I think we really have an implementation detail that we should be working on here, and I think we have a practice that at least among those who responded to us, is very, very widely done, this pre-registration. So I do think this is a problem to solve. And I think we have to take it back to the working group. Is it a token problem? Is it an implementation problem? Or is it a problem that could be addressed better by registration at another time, like registration when, you know, after, like the way we do verification for email and telephone number, which is after registration. And then we don't have any, we don't complicate our first come, first serve system. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Okay. Thanks, George, for the reference. Okay. Any other questions, comments on 3A or B? I see a few people typing, so I'll give it a minute. Oh, George, please go ahead.
Yeah, just request for the transcript. I did want to clarify that that cell G75 that I referenced really talks about how the current state of the order flow is in terms of the registrars implementing the notice. It didn't really seem to ask them how they would like it to be done in the future, so that probably would have been a good question to have thought of, but it's too late now. But I guess we have some registrars participating here now. They might be able to give their input on how they would have answered that hypothetical question. Thanks.
Thanks, George. Okay. Anyone else with comments or questions? Excellent. Good input on that. I guess we can move on to question. Oh, hold on. George has a comment. Please, George, go ahead.
Actually, I'll cancel. I think it was premature. I was going to point out
okay.
that. Okay, I'll save another time. Thanks.
Thanks, George. Okay, let's go on to question 4. Okay. All right. Looks like there's a few new comments. Let's go to Christine first to see if she has anything she wants to add to that. We'll give Christine a minute to refresh her memory.
I think I need to refresh my recollection about what I said. I think my only suggestion here was again thinking about balance. So my comment asked in the last question was about balance. You know, we do need to consider the fact that in this case, the preventative versus when we talk about like add more, like more than matching criteria, we talk about possibly upsetting the balance between preventative and curative rights. So we have some options that say where some marks, some terms, some strings, some matches are deemed worthy of sort of preventative tools like the claims notice. And the rest are basically kind of too fraught with peril, and those are going to be relegated to curative. And my point here is that as we discuss should things be different or better, I wanted to remind the group of the STI and the IRT's sort of original tapestry, which was sort of a finely honed balance. And we didn't actually end up with that as it is, but the finely honed balance of what, you know, what you got versus what you gave. And we need to be super careful that we don't tip the balance here in, you know, trying to fight too hard for trying to make the world perfect. I think one of my favorite people says all the time, let's not forego the good in search of the perfect. And so I think that's my sort of warning here. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Kathy, you had a few comments. Oh, there you are. Please go ahead.
Yeah, one set of comments in the chat with Michael Graham. Another set here. So I wanted to, I added a comment at the end of this. Let me see if it's there. Where I said that I think we discussed last week that questions for B and C and D had little, if any, data in the analysis group survey. So I wanted to see if anybody disagreed with that, that we really hadn't asked about these expansions. I certainly agree with Christine and her understanding of the balances that were put in by both the IRT and the STI and then by the council and approved by the council and the board for kind of the way things are. And I wanted to say one of my favorite people also has that same quote, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. I don't know if George or Rebecca want to say anything on their comments to Griffin's comments.
George here. I think we discussed Griffin's last week, because if you scroll down, there's a green text below his comments.
Yep. Yes. Thanks, George. All right, Christine, please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Christine. So I typed in the chat, but then I realized, like, why not have an interaction, you know, because I know I hate sharing when I'm the only one talking, so I'll talk. I think, as I recall, again, because I was one of the co-chairs of this originally, I believe one of the reasons we didn't get to claims questions for B was that we had the pretty complex proposal, what we were calling the Shatton-Winterfeld-Graham proposal in some order. I don't mean to, like, put anybody last. But I believe that that proposal is still out there. And the point was that we basically had to draw the line somewhere about what we could collect data on. And so trying to collect data on this B through D was not going to fit within the time we had allowed. You know, we had to keep the survey such that it didn't have the same problem as the INTA survey, which was that it was so long and cumbersome nobody could answer. So I believe that we had decided not to do that. So that, just for context, that's why there are no questions, really no questions. I think, as Graham pointed out, the trademark owner survey might have asked sort of one question about exact and non-exact matches. But we didn't dive into it because we had the survey, and there was some sense that we were possibly going to try to do some technical analysis to find out if the proposal was even technically feasible, because if it's not technically feasible, then it sort of becomes a moot point. Thanks.
Thanks for the extra background, Christine. That helps. Okay. Anyone else have any questions or comments they'd like to bring up for 4A? Few people typing, so I'll give it a minute. Okay. If no one has any comments they want to make, I think that ends our agenda items for the day. I can turn this back to Julie for ALB.
Yeah, thank you very much, Roger. This is Julie Hedlund from staff. So as for any other business, we'll note one change from the draft procedures document that staff had sent around recently on behalf of the working group co-chairs, and that was that it was indicated that there would be a full working group meeting next week for the sub-teams to provide their weekly update report on their status report on their progress. But in working with the sub-team co-chairs, both for this sub-team and for the Sunrise sub-team, staff understands that the report, the status report on where we stand with respect to the analysis of the survey data against the charter questions will be quite brief, really not long enough to warrant an entire working group meeting. And given that we also need to have the two sub-teams meet next week to move to the next stage of analysis, which is on the previously collected data,
The co-chairs and working group co-chairs, sub-team co-chairs and working group co-chairs agree that we will not have a full working group meeting next week. Instead, the sub-teams will meet at their usual time. So this sub-team will meet at 1700 UTC next week on the 30th of January. And in addition to that, staff is developing a tool and Google Sheets for Google Docs for the sub-team members to use to begin the analysis on previously collected data, and we'll have those out to the sub-team prior to next week's call. And I'm seeing that Michael Graham said staff resend a link to the survey question analysis. I see that George also has hand up. Let me go to George, and then let me clarify what link or links that you need, Michael. George, please.
George, here, I had a separate topic, so maybe if Michael wants to speak to his question, I could wait for him.
Sure. Michael, we're not quite sure what link you're referencing. And Christina's put up a link. One other thing that I'll note is I'm referring to the Excel spreadsheet that showed the questions and the answers. Okay, I think I know what that is. Ariel, typing. And one thing I'll also note that staff is preparing to assist with the report next week for the full working group is to summarize the discussions thus far on the survey analysis and put that into the summary table. There's a summary table for each of the sub-teams, and that will be something that we'll also send around to the sub-team as well. And once that's complete, that should be early next week, and we'll let you and ask you to note if there's anything that we've mischaracterized in that. Then I see that George has also sent a link. Okay, and Michael's confirming that that's it. Okay, very good. George, over to you, please.
George Gregos, the transcript. Yeah, this goes to the timeline. According to the latest timeline that was sent a couple of weeks ago, individual proposals for the various topics was supposed to be starting today and going for a couple of weeks. I expressed concern about that on the main mailing list. I was curious whether the timeline is going to be changed because we've got two of the three co-chairs here now, and we don't have any plenary working group calls scheduled for next week, I guess, because that's been canceled. So we should probably talk about that timeline. Thanks.
And thank you, George, for that. This is Julie Hedlund again from staff. Let me go first to Susan and Kathy. I do have at least a partial answer for you, but let me see first what Susan and Kathy would like to say as well. Please, Susan and then Kathy.
Hi, thanks. It's Susan Payne. This is just a comment on how the data is presented, really, and I wonder if it's possible to have that changed. There are a number of places where someone was asked, you know, how many times have you done X? And then there would be follow-up questions, you know, of these, how many times, you know, how many were you successful in? How many times were you unsuccessful? That kind of thing. But when it's done in absolute numbers and when you're not looking at the actual survey response for an individual person, where, you know, the answer for the first question and the answer for the second question actually against each other, there's no real way of assessing sort of percentage. And then there's a follow-up question in a number of places where it says, if you can't answer with the absolute numbers, give us a percentage. But all of that is incredibly unhelpful if overall you can't work out percentages. And so I'm just wondering if there's a way to kind of recast some of this data, which maybe analysis has to do. And I'm trying to think of a good example, but I mean, there's an example sort of, it's in question 25, you know, within the brand owners' surveys, for example, but there, it's all over. I mean, it's in all of the surveys. You know, it's sort of, you know, have you ever brought a UVRP? And then there are sort of ranges of I've brought, you know, 18 people said I've brought 1 to 10, 6 that I've brought 50 to 11 to 50 and so on. And then it goes, and then in approximately how many of these did you get a non? But we don't know, you know, how they reference back. You know, one person said they got 8, but how does that help us? When it's not referenced back to the previous question. So I'm just wondering if there's a way for some additional help from either staff or analysis group to actually be forming those connections for us.
Thank you, Susan. I'm going to go to Kathy, and then I'll try to address both George's question and your question. Kathy, please.
Sorry, coming off mute. So to George's question, I think we're still working on timelines for individual proposals. And in light of the of how fast this working group has worked through, the subteam has worked through these questions, the co-chairs may need to go back and rethink that timeline with staff. But I'll wait to see what Phil thinks about that. I wish Brian were on the call too. Cause we were trying to figure out kind of the optimum time to open for individual proposals, and it's not today. That much we can say we've delayed it a little bit. To Susan's question, I have a question about reopening the data because we've kind of gone through it all. So I wasn't quite sure what the proposal was there as we move on to the next set of data. Did want to summarize what Julie had said, which is that we do have data. It was collected, you know, a year and a half ago when we were working through the TMCH for the first time. We do have data, some data on trademark claims. Staff has made links about it, and that's what we're going to start going through now, which is really exciting. I'll go back and see to make a different comment, but I did want to make those comments kind of with my co-chair head on. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Kathy. Let me go to Phil, and let me also note that, as usual, we are ending this call at 5 minutes to the top of the hour, so we have 5 more minutes left of the call. Thank you. Phil, please.
Yes, thanks. Phil, for the record, and speaking as one of the full working group co-chairs, on the timing for submission of individual proposals, there was a co-chair call last Friday. Kathy and I were on. Brian couldn't make it, which has caused some delay in getting decisions out. But we did think there was some merit in George's concern. Our thinking as co-chairs is that we don't want the individual proposals coming in too early because they might well be proposals that the subteam might reach on its own once it's discussing the results of the data analysis. So we didn't want the subteams distracted and the window opening too early and closing too early, but we can't put it all the way at the end of the process because there is staff work required once those individual proposals come in, so we can't put it all the burden on staff at the very end. But our sense was that we wanted to move the window back for opening the period by at least a week and probably extend the period by at least 2 weeks, noting that most things get submitted just before windows are closing, not when they open. So that's where we are now. We do need to get something more formal out, and after the next call, I imagine the co-chairs will have their usual planning call this Friday, the full working group co-chairs, and hopefully we'll all be on and can get something out before the weekend. So that's the answer on that, but there's no the window is not open today, and there'll probably be some movement of that window back a week or so, and the tail end going back a little further. Thanks.
Phil, before you leave, this is Kathy. I want to ask a co-chair question in front of everyone, which is that it's my understanding that prior proposals that have to do with trademark claims, that we're going to ask them to be resubmitted in light of the data gathered in light of the structure that we created for individual proposals in the URF, so that any prior proposals, if the people who submitted them a year and a half ago still want them considered as individual proposals, that they can come back through, but they come back through in the new format. They have to be resubmitted. Is that your understanding as well?
Well, I don't have a full understanding of that, Kathy, but it doesn't seem like an unreasonable approach, the fact that something was proposed a year and a half ago. An awful lot has taken place since then, and it's not putting much of a burden on anyone who's still active in this working group if they think a proposal is still relevant and necessary to just resubmit it in whatever format we're now going to require. So that's I'm leaning toward agreeing with you, but I'd prefer that we have more a complete co-chair discussion this Friday before saying.
Okay, it was my sense that that's what we had agreed to and written, but you know, we'll revisit. Thank you.
Sure.
And thank you very much. This is Julie Headland from staff, putting myself in queue, and we just have 2 minutes left, so I'll be very brief. With respect to Susan's request, first, staff would note that we don't have any way to ask analysis group to do any more work. They have fulfilled what was in their contract, and they've been paid. And unfortunately, there's not any further money to have them take the data and do anything else with it. We can take this request back to the co-chairs. We will note that staff also has limited resources, and those right now are focused on helping the sub-team move ahead. So, and it's unclear to us, at least as staff, what a reanalysis of the data would do to answer the survey questions, also given the fact that this sub-team will not spend any more time on the survey question, survey data analysis against the charter questions, but is moving to the analysis of the previously collected data. So we'll take note of this, Susan. Thank you. And certainly consult with the co-chairs. But at this point, let me just thank everyone for all your work today. This call is being adjourned to give folks a little bit of time for the to transfer to the next meeting, which will start at 5 minutes after the top of the hour. Thank you all, and I hope you have a great morning, afternoon, or evening.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.